going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Welcome to another exciting Chicago Bullseye. I've got special treat today, the basketball historian, NBA historian, Tim Gallagher joins us again. Tim, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Fred. I did my pilgrimage across the desert to Las Vegas and saw the Bulls and many other teams up close and personal, so excited to talk about that.
You know, I'm really excited to hear about the Bulls and get your take on the team out in the Summer League out there in Las Vegas. But before we get into that, real quick question. You've been a veteran of the Summer League for several years now. Just like to get your take on how it's evolved and, in your opinion, if it's a good or a bad thing.
Sure. Well, as I was thinking back, I've been going to the Summer League for probably at least 35 years and maybe missed a few years here and there. So I've seen the evolution of it from a very informal, you know, maybe a couple steps above a rec league other than the level of talent that was playing at Loyola Marymount, you know, and seeing guys come in and formed teams that were set up but not affiliated with teams in the league, though. There wasn't really a Lakers team per se or teams directly affiliated, even though it was mostly NBA players. It would be Magic Johnson's All-Stars against Reggie Theus's Runners, or and teams put together that way.
Yep.
So it was much more informal in those days, and now it's evolved to, for the first time this summer, that all 30 NBA teams were there, and heavy broadcast coverage on television, and 10 games a day, and it's a real smorgasbord for any basketball fan to experience. The scale of it has gotten quite large, obviously, based on all that, and there were so many years that I went with my circle of friends or met them there, and we'd say to each other, why aren't there more people here? Don't people know about this? This is unbelievable, right? We could sit in the fifth row and watch, Dirk Nowitzki play against Ray Allen. And obviously, this is very early in their careers when they were rookies or first-year guys. But still, it was quite an experience. And obviously, things have caught up where there's large crowds. There's games going on in the two gyms. And a lot of excitement, and a lot of it is the credit to the way the league and the Summer League has marketed it and presented it.
So I love when you send the pictures of some of the players you met with some of the coaches. A little bit, if you don't mind sharing, I saw you had one with Luka Doncic. A little bit about him and in person. Would you say he's all of 6'8"? It sure looked like it, knowing you as a... Yeah, I would guess you're about 6 feet tall, maybe a little 6'1" or so. Is he all the height, and how was he to meet in person?
Yes, I happened to be at the Mavs Hotel, and they were headed out to practice. So I saw a few of the players trickling out, so I wanted to stick around and wait and say hello to Luka and size him up literally and figuratively. And, yeah, I'm about 6'2", so I would say the 6'8" measurement. I saw him listed officially at 6'7", so he's definitely that, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was 6'8", maybe in shoes. But, seemed to have a nice way about him, very humble, young. He is just a kid. And that's the other thing about going to the Summer League, and obviously that was at the team hotel, but you could almost walk anywhere and run into somebody. And obviously at the arena, just to describe it, so there's Thomas and Mack, which is the big arena, similar to what an NBA arena would look like for the most part. And then adjoining that is something called Cox Pavilion, which I would say is similar to most high school gyms at a medium to large size high school. So there's games going on simultaneously, and they stagger the tip-off. So you can catch a little bit of one game, walk through the concourse, never even going outdoors, and catch parts of another game and kind of map out your day that way. Certainly for the Bulls, I arranged my day where I was in my, I wanted to get a real good seat for that game and watch that game from tip to finish, which I was able to do. But it's quite an experience to go and sample bits of all 10 games, or if there's a few games you want to zero in on, you could certainly do that. And just walking the concourse or looking around in the stands, it's really a who's who of basketball executives, scouts, former players, current players, and, you know, except for the top level people that may have security or people around them, you could approach almost anyone for a photo or a brief discussion or get an autograph. So it's a real casual, it's almost like a basketball carnival or basketball convention type setting.
It's definitely something I plan on attending with you next year. I'm really looking forward to it. Let's get your thoughts on some of the Bulls players that you saw in person. And were you as impressed with Wendell Carter Jr. as everyone else was, especially myself? I mean,
I really was. I mean, I only saw the one game, the first game they played against Cleveland. So I was only there for the first Friday and Saturday. But, you know, I was in the gym basically from noon till about 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. those 2 days, believe it or not.
Oh, and, great. It's awesome.
One other little tip I would advise people that are thinking about going is I would suggest going early on in the summer league. So now it's, as you've probably seen on television, it's getting down to, I think the championship is tonight, actually. But early on, you pretty much get to see everyone that's on rosters and planning to play. But you'll notice, and the Bulls did play Carter Jr. and Hutchinson the whole way, but some teams will shut a guy down after a couple of games. Even with the most minor injury, they don't want to risk anything. Or if a guy's sort of proven, yep, he's what we thought they were, and let's not risk him being hurt, and let's get a longer look at some of these other guys. So yep. I know, you know, Jaren Jackson, they shut down, and some other players. So I would urge folks to go early on in the league just because you have a better chance of seeing the top draft picks or maybe second-year players that are still playing in the summer league and before some of them might get shut down for various reasons. But back to your question about the Bulls, and of course, I don't miss anything when I'm there, and I wanted to see how these guys interacted, how they ran through the layup line, how they prepared, everything about them. So, yes, Wendell Carter Jr., very impressive. I think the thing that really struck me is he just looks very comfortable on the court. Like, this is what I do, kind of a demeanor to him out on the floor. And I know a lot of folks thought, well, he was a safe pick, and I'm fine with a safe pick when you can do the things that he did. And the game I saw, was very impressed with his rim protection. I believe he blocked 5 shots the game I saw against Cleveland. Hit some outside shots as well, including one real timely 3 from the corner, and he shot that pretty effortlessly. It doesn't look like his shot is messed up or he really needs to be fixed. Obviously, he will continue to work on it and improve his mechanics and so on, but it didn't look broken to me in any way. And just his presence on the court was there was no moment that he seemed out of his element or in over his head. granted it's the summer league and they're not playing in a regular season game and, you know, at Boston Garden or something, right? But very impressed with everything about him, and reassured me that the Bulls made an excellent pick there.
Chandler Hutchinson, what's your take on him?
Well, I had a chance to see him play in person early in the college season, actually, at San Diego State, and it kind of had my eye on him for a while just as a pro prospect, and really liked the way he runs the floor. You know, he just, you know, really runs like a deer, and just his speed on the floor as someone either running the break or even leading the break seems to translate really well to what today's NBA is all about. And, you know, and a guy that looks like he could play probably 3 positions. I mean, I don't think he's a true point guard, but he could handle the ball in situations and not be out of his element. And obviously the 2 and 3 are I think what the Bulls really have in mind for him, but a guy that could get a rebound and go on the break and lead it as well as be a finisher. His speed and athleticism was really impressive. You know, looking at it up close and playing against that level of competition, which was certainly a notch up from when I saw him play at San Diego State. And San Diego State made the NCAA tournament and has some pretty impressive athletes as well. But obviously the summer league rosters are a notch above the college team rosters. But I really like what I saw of him. And a few other things, as I dug in a little bit to his background, and the Bulls fans in general that maybe aren't following programs like Boise State out west, which is a little closer to me, and following that because of being in the same conference with San Diego State. Plus Chandler Hutchison is a Orange County kid, so SoCal. So I've kind of kept my eye on him or aware of some of the top high school players. But a couple things. The 4 years he was at Boise, they won 25, 20, 20, and 23 games. So winning program. The other thing is his coach is Leon Rice, who was a longtime assistant at Gonzaga and understudy of Mark Few. So that coaching tree, everyone knows what Gonzaga's accomplished and the kind of players they've produced and the culture of that program. So point is that Chandler's had some good college coaching and development. And then you look at his statistics over the course of his career at Boise. Freshman year, 3 points a game. Sophomore year, 6 points a game. Junior year, 17. And then finally as a senior, 20. So that tells me a lot about the trajectory that he's on and his development as a player. And I know there's seems to be more appeal to some of these one-and-dones or guys that are 19 that are maybe just scratching the surface. But I also like seeing guys that are on that kind of a growth as a player. And I think the Bulls made a shrewd pick at 22 to get him. The areas I'd like to see him work on a little bit, and I actually had a chance to chat with Jim Paxson a little bit at on the concourse there in between games. And my thought was, I like the way he takes the ball to the basket and is kind of a slasher, but he's got a good outside shot. And I thought he was maybe needing to work a little more on his shot selection and not pass up open shots. Yeah. You know, I appreciate the attack mentality. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'd much rather have a guy that, hey, you need to dial it back. And if you've got an open 17-footer, even if it's relatively early in the shot clock, we want you taking that shot. That's a makeable shot, rather than just always being on the attack. So rather than somebody that maybe you're trying to get to the basket and get to the line more often, and that's not their typical mindset. So I think making the adjustments is going to be easier turning it that way. But he looks like he belongs out there in terms of his athleticism and the way he runs the court. He had a few nice two-man game plays. He had an alley-oop dunk, and looks like a basketball player.
Yeah, I mean, my feelings about him were he didn't shoot the ball well, I felt, at all during the summer league, and that might explain why he was, you know, a little bit more aggressive than usual, and I think that's always better to be a little bit more aggressive than passive. I was really impressed with his length. I didn't expect to see. I thought he's very long, and his athleticism was impressive to me. You know, I think if he can develop that jumper, it's just so important in today's game that guy's able to hit the three. If he can hit the three at a consistent basis, he's gonna be a player in the league for a long period of time. So you said you knew him as a high school player in Southern California. Why wasn't he more heavily recruited? Was he just a late bloomer?
Well, I knew of him. Obviously, there's a couple powerhouse programs in Orange County near where he grew up, and he did not play at one of those schools. So one of them is Mater Dei. So Stanley Johnson, for example, that's in the NBA right now from the Pistons. They've produced dozens of elite college players and probably double figures in NBA players as well. And then there's Rancho Santa Margarita where Klay Thompson played. So there's two other schools, you know, relatively close to him that really kind of get more of the publicity, I guess you'd say. And even Jay Serra, which is in Orange County, has been producing some players recently. So I think the fact that the school he played for was maybe a little under the radar, and just in his development that some of the bigger schools didn't go after him. So again, we talked about his progression as a player, and obviously somebody at Boise saw something, and I know from talking to people and a little bit about the Gonzaga program that their player development is exceptional. And so again, Leon Rice being a Mark Few disciple and friend, I'm sure has taken all that in. So a little surprising that he was overlooked by maybe some of the Pac-12 schools, but obviously it worked out for him, and And again, I know some of the comparisons pre-draft were a player like Paul George, who was at Fresno State, and you wonder, well, gosh, didn't somebody see something in Paul George earlier on that, you know, how did he end up at Fresno State? So there's guys we talked about all the time from some of the mid-majors that are having a big impact in the league. So the fact that he wasn't part of a more elite college program doesn't really concern me. And in some ways, again, I think that's fueling his fire and maybe a little chip on his shoulder in terms of the development that he's been showing.
What were some of the players, not necessarily on the Bulls, that left an impression with you in summer league that were, wow, this guy's better than I expected?
Yeah, well, I'll page through the rosters here real quick. One other Bull that I get a kick out of watching play, and I saw him in summer league a little bit last year, is Blakeney. That guy just is a natural born scorer. I know there's some other gaps in his game, but he's certainly intriguing, and you know, put up some numbers in summer league again this year as well. And maybe there's a spot for him as kind of a secret weapon on the bench. Put him in, and if he's hot, leave him. If he's not, take him out of there. Kind of a poor man's, you know, Nate Robinson or Aaron Brooks type role potentially. But he's kind of fun to watch, and obviously knows how to put the ball in the basket.
No doubt. Really quick on him. I mean, I think he was the G League MVP last year. I hope the Bulls still continue the relationship with him, either at for selfish reasons, you know, so close to home here to watch Windy City Bulls. But also, I see that guy as kind of like a six-man of the year eventual candidate if he's given an opportunity. You know, a guy to come off the bench and really score for a team. You know, kind of like a Jamal Crawford type of player. He needs to shoot a little bit better. I think that's the thing that's kind of kept him back, is he hasn't really shot it great from the outside to really make a difference and really attract a long-term roster spot. But if he can do that and get better with his shot, I think there's no doubt that guy could be a sixth or seventh man off the bench for some team. And I think it's going to take a team like last year, you know, how the Nets were, you know, had so many injuries and they were tanking the way it was, for him to get an opportunity to showcase what he does. But the Bulls rosters right now, I know people might laugh when I say this, but it's kind of stacked. It's kind of fit. We're going about, you know, 12 deep right now, 13 deep with guys who are going to definitely have a spot, and we'll see how they end up. But there's not really a great spot for him on this team.
Right, probably not. He is fun to watch and can certainly fill it up. But, yeah, I'm just scanning, you know, with all 30 teams here. I've got, you know, rosters on all the teams that I, you know, had with me and printed out. But just a few little thumbnails of guys I saw. Certainly DeAndre Ayton, saw a little bit of him. He's a physical monster and, you know, still a little raw. And I don't know that the Suns are going to jump into a playoff spot or anything, but certainly a lot of talent and a physical presence. Bagley. Saw him a little bit, and the way he runs the court, boy, what a gazelle, and, you know, handled the ball a few times in the open court, which created quite a buzz in the crowd, and, you know, definitely, you know, long and athletic and can really run. Porter Jr. was there, but didn't play. And I understand they're going to shut him down this year. They're going to redshirt him and, try to get him healthy and, in Denver. So he will not play this season. One of my sources I saw. Or maybe that's more public news now, or just.
I don't think that something. Is. Wait, so you talk to people, he's definitely not going to play this entire season.
Correct.
Wow. And the reason why, is he that hurt? Is it, or is it just a precautionary step by the team?
Yeah, I think more precautionary. So again, maybe the Bulls' pick of not selecting him was, you know, for at least immediate. Immediate help would be maybe a wise move in the long run. Denver's a little farther along maybe and feels like they can stash him and develop him. And I know they were excited. The person I talked to was quite excited he was available for them at that pick, but they're not going to rush it. Mm. I saw Bamba play, and it didn't do it for me. I was expecting more, and actually saw him play in the little gym, so I saw him up close and personal, and you know, he dunked the ball a few times right at the rim on you know, passes or putbacks, but he still looks like he's years away. And I don't know. Orlando's got a funky roster, and I'm not sure what they're doing anyway. But I was expecting more, just with the buzz that seemed to be gathering about him as we had our pre-draft discussions. I thought, well, maybe I missed something from when I watched him at Texas, but I know he had a few moments in summer league, I guess. Yeah, yeah. I heard after I saw him play, but just he still looked like he's a ways off from yeah. having any kind of impact on the floor.
I mean, to jump in on Bamba, since it's, you know, I had so many debates with, you know, Keith Franz, our good friend Keith Franz, and other people who really wanted Bamba ahead of you know, Wendell Carter Jr. I might have gone a little bit hard just on Bamba, just because I did honestly believe that Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be a better pro. He definitely was a better college player, and anyone who watched the tape could admit that. I was slightly impressed though with Bamba watching him in the summer league. He definitely was not as bad as I expected, and I really don't expect him to be a great pro. But I think he'll have a place. I think he'll definitely have a place. He's at best though is going to top out as an average NBA basketball player. I don't think he has enough offensive skills or will ever be strong enough to be a good offensive player at best average. But you know, defensively, you did see some things that he is incredibly freakishly long, and he'll always probably have a place due to that. But I'm definitely feeling good about our pick in passing, and we didn't even get the opportunity, and just shows how dumb Orlando is. But you know, I might have been a little bit overboard on saying he's going to be a bust. He'll probably have an average NBA career. I don't ever expect to make an All-Star team or be a great player, though.
Right, I agree with you. This isn't in any particular order. Well, Doncic was there but didn't play, so he was practicing with the team. But I think because of the fact that his Euro season went so late, they didn't want to put more mileage on him. But he was there and practicing with the team, and again had a nice little exchange with him.
You see Trae Young at all?
I did. I saw Trae Young. Didn't shoot a good percentage, but he's one of those guys that I don't know what it's going to translate in terms of wins, but it might translate in terms of people in the crowd. But he's one of those guys that there's a buzz in the arena when he's playing.
Sure.
Right? And
sure.
And I'd not seen him in person before the other day. So even in summer league, there's certain guys that have whatever that when they've got the ball in their hands or they're making something happen, there's a little different energy all of a sudden in the arena. And he has that. So obviously the Hawks are trying to get something exciting going, and so I think he's going to be interesting to me. He looks a little, he's got to get stronger. Didn't shoot a good percentage, so I think he's an intriguing guy to watch. I don't know what it's going to translate to in terms of success and wins on the court short term, but there's some talent there, and again, people are picking up on some buzz around him. Jaren Jackson, I thought, looked really good. And he's all of 6'11". He seems like he's even taller. I happened to pass him in the concourse, when he wasn't playing, but he was maybe going to see another Michigan State guy play or a friend from somewhere. And it kind of struck me how big he was. But he played well, and there was some buzz about him. I saw Sexton play against the Bulls, and definitely a lot of speed. I kind of wonder how he's going to score the ball at that level. More of a slasher and penetrator, but definitely an elite athlete, and and kind of takes command of the game. I it's going to be interesting with Cleveland, obviously, with LeBron gone and what they're going to do with their roster. I still think where he was picked was a little high, but.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if he's ever going to shoot the ball, especially from three-point range, at what we would expect from an NBA-level player. I see him, as I saw him play, kind of remind me a little bit of like a poor man's John Wall, that kind of player.
Yeah.
Where, if he can get to the rim, get things in transition, but, in a half-court set or, a pick and roll or, consistently making outside shots, I think he's a ways from that. Mikal Bridges, I know that's one of your favorites. I saw him play a little bit with Phoenix, and he was impressive. I like what I saw from him.
No
and
doubt.
I think he's going to be a very solid player. Kevin Knox had a really good game against Atlanta, a game I saw, and really liked him. And I think he's got some upside. He seems to really be able to score the ball, and both hitting outside shots and going to the rim and dunking on people. So I think the Knicks may have a good one. It's been a while, but I think think they made a good choice there.
He definitely looked a lot more athletic than anything I saw in any of the college tapes. It was almost like, whoa, where did this come from? You know, and our friend, again, Keith Franz, has been talking about him for quite a while. But I know, you don't ever want to get too excited about just, you know, a couple summer league games, but I agree completely. He was very impressive. You know, a guy I saw that I was kind of, like, shocked with, who played, you know, and again, you shouldn't go by just one summer league game, but in this game he was absolutely insane, was this Furkan Korkmaz.
I saw you had 40, and I didn't see that game, but I saw you put up 40.
Oh my gosh! I was like, and you know, I've long been a detractor of the Sixers' chances, and unless they get some outside shooting, you know, and they lost a couple key players, Ilyasova, who they picked up in the second half of the year, and they kind of took off in conjunction with those, you know, and Bellinelli, who are both gone, and this guy, I guess, was their number one pick last year, late in the first round, and. That game I saw specifically, he hit every shot. I mean, he looks like he's got, you know, good three distance, not super athletic, which you don't expect from a European, but he was exactly what that team would need. So I'm praying that that was just a one-off and that, you know, that guy is not a real player, because my goodness, that was incredible performance from him.
Right. I saw his numbers leveled off a little bit, but he still had some double-figure games and looked pretty good. Now, you mentioned Knox, and maybe it's a situation where Kentucky just has so many players, it's hard for some of these guys to really show what they could do. Even with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's with the Clippers, you know, he was impressive as well. And I know he came on strong maybe the last third of the season at Kentucky, but he definitely looks really comfortable handling the ball. And again, I'm totally aware we're talking summer league and not, you know, he's not playing against Damian Lillard or Steph Curry or somebody, right? But you could see that, you know, kind of like the Wendell Carter description I had is, you know, this is what I do, right? I'm born to do this, this game, no right? Doubt. And that's kind of how he is. So anyway, yeah, that's a couple of quick snapshots on people. You know, and there was a few second year guys that looked really, really good, and sometimes you'd expect that maybe where they've got a year of maybe some G League and playing in the league under their belts. So like a John Collins, that game I saw with the Hawks against the Knicks, John Collins was fantastic. You know, he was their first round pick last year from Wake Forest. So you kind of hope to see that out of a guy who's had a little bit of NBA experience to be, you know, elite at this level. And so he was an example of one of those players.
I was shocked to see him play. I don't know, there are a couple secondary guys. They had Dennis Smith Jr. playing in a game. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I would never have a guy that makes first team all NBA rookie or second team playing that just out of fear of getting hurt, you know? But I understand if a guy had a disappointing rookie season, but it's interesting to see. I did want to get into, Tim, we haven't talked to you in a while, so I want to get your take on two obviously important signings with the Chicago Bulls. Let's first get into Jabari Parker, which happened this past week. I'd like to get your opinion on him as a player overall, and was this a good signing by the beloved Bull in your eyes?
Well, I think it was a good signing just because they only are obligated for 1 year. And, you know, and I like the fact that he's a Chicago hometown kid. And coming out of high school, I believe he was the number one player in the country, or at least in some of the ratings he was, and
no doubt.
And then after the 1 year at Duke, was the number two overall pick. So if you can get a guy that was 23 years old, and, you know, unless their name is, you know, Anthony Bennett or Kwame Brown or something, I think I'd take a long look at him. Right.
Yeah.
And,
Jamil Okafor.
And I remember my brother-in-law, saw Jabari Parker play in an AAU game, early in his high school career. I mean, maybe before his junior year. And my brother-in-law is a pretty astute judge of talent, told me this is one of the elite players he's ever seen at that age, at that level. And, you know, just his basketball IQ and overall skill set. So I kind of watched him a little more closely with that. His 1 year at Duke was just so-so. I know they got upset by Mercer in the first round of the tournament in one of those bracket buster games that has everybody going wild the first couple days of the tournament. So I'm sure that didn't go as he had hoped, but and again, he's one of those multi-position players. I just, when I watched him with the Bucks this year, and probably most closely in that series against Boston, you know, he showed some moments of playing well, but I just wondered about his lateral movement, and you know, he seemed to be pretty effective, you know, going straight up and down the court. But you wonder with those knee injuries if that's impacted, you know, the kind of ways he can move on the floor and the ways he can score. And even, you know, maybe, you know, an 80% of the original Jabari Parker is still a pretty good NBA player. I don't know. I guess that's what we're going to find out. But I'm fine with it. And, you know, again, I like the Chicago ties. I like the fact that he's 23 years old. He seems to have a very positive attitude, you know, in terms of, you know, just his demeanor and how he could blend in with the team. And so I think from a public relations standpoint and, you know, a potential standpoint, let's give it a shot.
Yeah, I said this on Waddle and Sylvie. Last year there were 23 guys in the NBA to average 20 or more points. It's not easy to do. And it was only, you know, two short years ago that he averaged over 20 points per game in 50-some games before that second ACL tear. My general opinion of this whole situation, he's got to lose weight. I've always felt he's looked too heavy to me. He should be playing the three. And then maybe they asked him to be a little stronger with the, you know, Giannis and basically playing the three there, almost like a point forward for Milwaukee. I don't know, but I hope the Bulls sat him down, and I'm probably sure, hopefully, this happened to some degree. And his agent sat him down and said, you got to get in better shape. You're going to be playing the three for us, so we need you quicker, we need you faster and stronger, and it's going to be better on your knee. The more weight you carry, the more difficult it's going to be for you. So I hope that's the direction they go in. But, you know, for 1 year, like you said, I don't think that's even remotely a lose-lose. I think it's a great move.
Right, and the fact that they didn't have to give up anything to get a player of his stature as well. I mean, I know they cut Zipser and but there was somebody else they released also. So, you know, I know they had to make a few roster moves, but they're not Basically, players that are going to be in the rotation or,
right.
Going to have an impact. So, no, I'm excited about it. And again, adds another guy to this young core. And, you know, I haven't mapped it all out in my mind, but, you know, I could see the Bulls playing some lineups where, you know, everyone's between, you know, 6'5 and 6'11 out on the floor at the same time and, you know, switch everything. I know watching Jabari Parker, even after the knee injury, there were times where I'd see a highlight play of him making an explosive dunk or, you know, like an offhand left-handed dunk in traffic, just like, whoa, where did that come from? You know, and this guy's had knee issues. So I've seen little flashes of that. And you're right, his ability to score the ball, it's not easy to do at that level. So I've heard some criticism of his defense and some other things, but the individual defense, other than if he's not trying, that's one thing. But you know, with team defense and the way the league is, I'm not so worried about that. So I just hope he stays healthy and is able to contribute and blend in with the rest of the guys, which I'm pretty confident will happen.
Agree. Two more quick things before we let you go, and we really appreciate you joining the Bullseye today. Your thoughts on Zach LaVine and that agreement, and also LeBron going to the Lakers, because we haven't talked with you in the interim since then.
Right. Well, with LaVine, I thought it was a no-brainer that the Bulls were going to sign him. I think the question just was it an offer that the Bulls would make and they'd be the only suitor, or they're going to have to match somebody. And obviously the Kings came up with something and the Bulls matched it in minutes, right? I mean, there wasn't much time that passed and we heard the offer sheet was made by the Kings and the Bulls matched it, right? It was almost a nanosecond. So I think that was the plan all along. I think he showed enough in his little audition, I guess you'd say, once he came back from the knee injury. And I didn't put a whole lot of stock into all the numbers and the fact that the Bulls roster was kind of in flux and, you know, are they tanking? Are they trying to win games? Are they trying to develop guys? You know, it was really a funky season on a number of levels. So I didn't really put too much stock in all those variables. I just really wanted to see what his attitude was like on the floor. And I know he had a couple of big games. I remember that. It was a home win against Minnesota in particular, I think, that it showed me a lot, right? Do you remember that game?
Yeah, absolutely.
That game also?
Of course, Tibbs and Butler.
He just looked like he wanted to be in Chicago and wanted to be part of it. And I think he's continued to to show that. So that coupled with, again, very young player, still developing, and I think the fact that it was part of the Butler trade and you got those components, I think the Bulls were committed to making that commitment to him and seeing if this core group can do something now and get in the playoffs and maybe even a little beyond.
No, agree. And how about
were you happy with it, or any concerns at all?
I mean,
with either overpaying a little, or
I wanted it a little bit lower rate than, you know, I thought a fair amount would have been 15 to 18. He got it at 20. Big picture, you can't let a guy like that just walk for nothing. And you know, I hope everybody's concerned about his defense. I think he's got all the tools to be an average defensive player. To me, defense is athleticism and want to. He's got, and you know, it helps to have length. He doesn't have the length, but he's got the athleticism. He's got the want. He just needs to get a little bit more aggressive and be better and learn a little bit more what he needs to do off ball. But I'm not really worried about that. You know, the question is, to me, my biggest question with LaVine has always been, I don't think he's making Lowry better. I don't think he's making his teammates better. I thought it, you know, for a lot of games last year, I thought he was playing pretty selfishly. But that said, you know, he was playing for a contract. 27 minutes a game over 24 games is not a fair judge of how good this kid can be. He shot the ball extremely poorly, but the previous 2 years, I thought he shot it very well. So what I want to see from LaVine is bringing that scoring occasionally, hitting the three consistently, and just learning how to work better with his teammates, and I think that will come over time. I'm not worried about it too much. I do question whether or not he'll be the guy in a long-term future for this team, whether he'll be a part of the team that I feel will challenge for a title. I think that, without a doubt, Markkanen is going to be a part of that, and same with Wendell. But I'm not absolutely sold on him. I almost have Dunn a little bit ahead of him just because I love Dunn's defense so much. But, you know, overall, it's nothing that I think anybody should lose sleep about.
Right. Yeah, I think it was the right move.
So, LeBron, to wrap things up, and again, thanks for joining us again this week. LeBron, what's your take on that? Were you shocked? You think it's a good move on his part? Love to get your thoughts on it.
Well, we'd have to go back to the tapes, I guess, of past podcasts, but I'm pretty sure I predicted somewhere back there that he would end up in Los Angeles. I might have thought the Clippers were the secret destination potentially, with Jerry West and Ballmer working some sort of angle for it. So it didn't surprise me. I felt like LeBron paid his dues in Cleveland. He delivered on the championship. You saw how hard he had to work the last couple seasons to get them to the finals and kind of carry the team. So I think it was understandable that for a lifestyle and post-basketball career decision to come out to LA. I'm a little skeptical on how successful the Lakers are going to be with the components they have on their current roster. I thought the signings were a little strange in terms of wild cards like JaVale McGee and Lance Stephenson and
Rondo.
And Rondo. But the other thing is, I mean, I certainly don't wish any ill will on LeBron, but I'm still stunned he's been such, shown such durability throughout his career. I know he's a, you know, freak of nature physically, but, you know, 34 years old with all the mileage he has on him, I just, I don't know, for some reason I just am skeptical that all these components are going to fit together and it's going to translate to a lot of success on the court. Now, I don't have to go back too far to think of the Lakers when they had Dwight Howard and Nash and Kobe and what they thought that might lead to, and that certainly didn't work. So I'm never going to count out LeBron, but I think there's a lot of pieces that need to fit together for them to even, you know, get beyond, let's say, the, you know, the 6th or 7th seed. You know, to get a seed lower than that would really surprise me in the West.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a little bit tougher than he expects. And there's so many good teams in the West, and teams like the Suns, even the worst teams in that conference, seem to be trying to get better. Memphis, Dallas. I mean, it's really going to be interesting to see what happens. But, I mean, it's considerably better than the East right now, and I think that's an advantage for the beloved Bulls. But it's going to be fascinating. I wish the season started, and I'm just so excited to see what happens next year. So,
well, I think it really does open things up in the East, and I know a lot of people, obviously Boston, I'm very high on Boston, and I'm sold on them. Despite the success that Philly showed last year, I think, in my opinion, I think there's still an inflated view of how good the Sixers are. And, you know, I know Simmons showed some things, Embiid showed some things, but I think there's big concerns about Embiid's health, obviously. You know, a big guy with foot problems and leg problems, Simmons' inability to shoot the ball. So, you know, Fultz, you know, has so far been a bust, even though I know he showed a few little flashes for a 8 or 10 game stretch there, maybe. But, I just don't see the trajectory to the finals for them as easy as I hear a lot of the so-called experts say.
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more, Tim. I think you're 100% right. One final question before we wrap it up. Your prediction now, if you had to take a bet, would the Lakers make the playoffs next year?
Yes, I think they'll make the playoffs, but I see them as probably a 6 or 7 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And in the West, that's, I don't know how many wins that, you know, that's probably, what, 50 wins, maybe? 52
yeah.
wins in the West, which is pretty darn good. You know, I think LeBron will them to a number of wins, just, you know, because of who he is. But
and which team would that likely
knock out? That's a big leap
out.
Of improvement from where they were last year, even with adding LeBron and all those pieces. And I don't know, maybe there's moves still to be made as well. We didn't even touch on the whole Kawhi Leonard thing, which you know, I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen there. And that'll impact what the Spurs status is in the West as well, of course.
Yeah, amen. Tim, it's always great to talk with you, my friend. Really looking forward to having you on again sometime, hopefully next week. I will get into a little bit of, unfortunately, some of the players that have passed away over the last couple weeks and months, and then also get your recommendations for some new books outside of what you already have given us. How's that sound?
That sounds great, Fred. Well, enjoy the final days of Summer League, and we'll see if there are any other transactions that spark our interest. And then we got a little bit of a gap before the exciting start of training camp, and I really am enthused about seeing this young core that the Bulls have put together.
Amen. All right, Tim, have a good one, my friend. Talk to you soon, brother.
You too, Fred.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye Special. Addendum to yesterday's podcast, recorded on the 17th. Today's the 18th, and right after we finished it, big news in the NBA. We have the basketball historian Tim Gallagher joining us. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Fred. And being here in San Diego, a lot of eyes have been on Kawhi Leonard for a long time. He's arguably the greatest player ever to wear a San Diego State Aztecs uniform. So everyone here has kind of followed his career, and I think a lot of people have been very unsettled and disturbed by the way things came apart at San Antonio, but looks like he's going to be putting on a new uniform now.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff here. And for those that don't know, Tim lives in the San Diego area, so he's really dialed into that area. Love to get, first of all, Tim, I've been so busy all day with work. Love to get the details on the trade, number one, and your initial thoughts.
Sure. Well, the Spurs traded Kawhi Leonard, age 27, and Danny Green, age 31, to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan, age 28, Jakob Poeltl, age 22, and a first-round pick in 2019. So my initial gut reaction to that was for Kawhi basically giving an ultimatum to the Spurs, which is interesting to me because you got to figure R.C. Buford and Greg Popovich are pretty top-level, intense competitors, and when you back them against a wall, that's probably not advisable for most people. But obviously Kawhi has a lot of cachet, being that he's got some impressive credentials in the league. He's accomplished a lot, but certainly a question mark with his injury. But my initial reaction based on all that was I thought the Spurs made out quite well in that deal, and in the sense that DeRozan's still under contract, I believe, for 2 or 3 more years, and he's only 28 years old, and you could argue pretty strongly that his career is still on the rise. You know, he's been an all-star, arguably the best player on the team that was the number one seed in the East last year. So that's some pretty impressive credentials. Now, have we all been disappointed that Toronto couldn't get past LeBron in Cleveland? Have we seen them underachieve a number of times in the playoffs? Did we see that the coach of the year, Dwayne Casey, was fired right after the season started? So, you know, there's definitely been some odd things happening in San Antonio. And we've talked over the years, really, about players kind of in that second tier of elite players. And we, you know, initially talked about that a lot when Jimmy Butler was with the Bulls. And where does he kind of fit in with the top 10 players in the league? And what's that next tier? And I always kind of felt DeRozan was in that next tier, which is certainly very respectable. I put players like Jimmy Butler and Paul George and Damian Lillard, and probably Blake Griffin has slipped down to that tier now. He might have been a little more elite at one point. So that's a very talented and impressive group of players. But I thought the fact that Kawhi only has 1 year left on his deal and has some health issues, that the Spurs were able to get those kind of assets from Toronto is quite impressive. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating trade in the fact that I think the Raptors have locked themselves into two players who were paid, you know, like max money, who were, as you said, in that second tier. And I think that's the worst thing you could do. You know, I think, you know, signing yourself to two players and really maxing yourself out and kind of putting yourself in a corner in DeRozan is not ideal. And he clearly wasn't good enough to get him over that hump, right, in the East. And in doing so, now you've kind of freed yourself from that commitment and brought in a player who's definitely better, who I think is in the top, you know, top 6 or 7 in the NBA. He's the real deal, who's a step up on DeRozan. And you give yourself an opportunity to maybe make the miracle this year and get out of the East. And if he leaves next year, then you just kind of start over and you rebuild. And if he stays and they do end up going to the finals and he learns to love Toronto, well, then you actually have yourself a team that you can actually win it. You have a player that actually deserves to be paid in that max tier. From San Antonio's perspective, you know, this is kind of what I think what they're doing is they're getting a player that is in that second tier, and they've specialized in building challengers or building teams that can compete for a title with those types of players. You know, I don't think anyone would ever say Tony Parker. The thing is, though, Tim Duncan was the top, top six or seven. So they haven't won anything since he left, but they've had contenders, and those contenders have been built around players in that second tier. You know, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, all those guys are those second tier type of players. So kind of a fascinating trade. I don't think it's going to ever produce a title for San Antonio, but probably about the best you can do in exchanging Kawhi Leonard for a player who's clearly probably in the top 20.
Right. I agree, and I totally agree with your points on Toronto and what the potential upside could be for them. Why not roll the dice? LeBron's gone. You've got an elite player like Kawhi that maybe could make a difference, right? Or just a change and you know, not a significant drop, at least for next season, assuming Kawhi is going to be able to play close to 100% health-wise. I'm a little unclear on the new coach, Nick Nurse, and what he can do as a first-year coach. And, you know, Dwayne Casey, I think, was a little bit disrespected over the years for whatever reason. And, again, nobody in the East got past LeBron for 8 years, so I don't know that it's incompetence on Dwayne Casey's part, but that certainly does free things up a little bit in the East. And Toronto's got some interesting young talent as well. And the thing that the Spurs were able to do kind of in general beyond this trade is they're getting younger and more athletic, which is something that they really probably needed to do. Danny Green was a very competent and solid player and part of some championship teams as well, but he's 31 and you know, and seems to have slowed down a little bit. They didn't match on Kyle Anderson and his contract.
Yeah.
Who was a young player, but I don't think he really was worthy of that price. And I wouldn't say he's an athlete. You know, his nickname is Slow Mo, so he's not an uber athlete kind of player. And of course, they let Tony Parker go. They wouldn't give him 2 years, so he ended up in Charlotte. So the fact that they removed those pieces and then they've added, obviously, DeRozan and Poeltl, and then DeJounte Murray and Derek White, so their first-round picks from the past two seasons, along with this year's first-round pick, Lonnie Walker the fourth, you know, gives them three young athletic wings, 19, 21, and 24 years old. So I can see where they're headed. And with Poeltl, I saw him play a little bit at Utah, being out here in the West and mm-hmm. University of Utah. And I've always been intrigued by his talent. And I saw a big jump in his improvement last season at the NBA level too, from his first to second year. So
yeah.
I think he's an intriguing young player. I know we've always talked about, you know, if a 7-footer can't step out and shoot threes, is there a place for him? But if you look at clips of him, he can run the floor. He can score on the pick and roll, you know, on the roll to the basket and finish. He's a shot blocker. So I almost see him as kind of a real young version of Pau Gasol. And with Gasol there in San Antonio, I could see Poeltl doing a little bit of an apprenticeship under Gasol. And then, as you mentioned, the Spurs player development is second to none. So I think with those combination of things, that was a real key asset, I think, to make the deal kind of a no-brainer. If you could get DeRozan and Poeltl and a first-round pick, you're not going to do better than that for Kawhi Leonard based on all the variables in this situation.
No, true. I think it condemns them, though. However, they're not going to win anything in the West, and they're not coming out of there, you know, against the premier Titans in that really competitive conference. I think the most fascinating thing out of this whole scenario is what's happened with Kawhi Leonard. How's he going to handle this? You know, from everything I've heard, he had no interest in going there. I think a lot on this guy's, there's a lot of questions around him. You know, if he's smart, he's going to just take it and he's going to go out and have a fantastic year and then he'll be able to go wherever he wants to. But I have concerns that he might just continue this whole insane process that he's had over the last year. And, you know, continue to say that he's hurt. And then if he does, I mean, what do you think the ramifications are for him? What's your prediction on what's going to happen here?
Well, you're right. It's sort of been unprecedented steps that he's taken. We talked about him not being on the bench for home playoff games and things like that. And you're hearing that he doesn't want to be in Toronto, but I've still never seen a direct quote from Kawhi during any of this mess.
I don't think I've ever seen a direct quote from Kawhi, period.
That's part of the issue. He's a very guarded guy, and as I mentioned, I did get to know him a little bit and work with him a little bit very early in his career, just through some circumstances. So I was in the gym with him quite a bit as he was making the transition from San Diego State to the league, and always a very respectful, soft-spoken guy, but you're right, getting him to comment on about anything, even if it's, you know, hey, where do you like to go get pizza in San Diego? He wouldn't reveal anything. So when it's these kind of shaky and uncertain issues, you know, it's unlikely that he's going to comment on it either. So it probably wouldn't be totally out of the realm if he just sat out the season or did something crazy like that. I don't know what the league would do about it. I don't know what the franchise would do about it. But all that said, you know, there seems to have been a shift in general that the players kind of held the cards and management and ownership, you know, was kind of taking a back seat to that. But I think in this deal, you know, they didn't really succumb to Kawhi's wishes, at least what we've heard publicly from other sources of what he wanted to do, go to L.A. So, like I said, R.C. Buford and Popovich, they're running a business. They're running the San Antonio Spurs. And so I don't think they're going to be strong-armed by anybody, especially a player like Kawhi Leonard who's under contract.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating if he decides to sit out again. I mean, at that point, the league needs to step in because this is uncharted territory where a guy's under contract to play and he refuses to play. I've never seen a situation like this. You know, at least last year you could use the excuse that he was injured. I've never heard of an injury last 2 years. And if he does choose to go down that road, you got to wonder, and they don't do anything, you have to wonder, seriously consider, you'd almost be insane to sign this guy, you know, to a long-term deal. I would have massive reservations on doing it. I'd still probably do it if I were the Bulls, because I made the statement today that, you know, he could play in Toronto, and there's a good chance there's only 11 teams with cap space next year. He could sign with the Bulls outright, and I think he'd be a perfect fit in what we've built so far. But it's going to be interesting to see if he does choose that same route that he chose last year, to just milk this injury into another year of questions, you know?
I don't know. Right. Well, and there are a lot of variables, just like we discussed, but even, like you said, going to another franchise, and really San Antonio's in a very elite company in terms of how well they're run, especially by NBA standards, right? In terms of the environment, the player development, the winning culture, the leadership at all levels, an owner that lets Popovich and Buford run the business. You know, just a lot of things that you see as dysfunctional in other places, you really don't see in San Antonio. And this is one of the few times where the Spurs franchise has kind of had a little bit of a dark cloud, although it's really Kawhi that appears to be creating a lot of it. So really what I'm saying is almost any franchise is going to be a step down, so to speak, from what Kawhi's been used to in terms of just, you know, all the aspects of how the franchise is run. So that's another component. Not that, you know, Toronto seems to be pretty competent in terms of, you know, they've been successful, they've been winning over the past few years. They seem to have drafted pretty well. So I don't think it's a broken franchise by any means. But again, San Antonio, just in terms of all franchises in sports, is always at the top of those lists. So that's going to be an adjustment for Kawhi as well.
No, absolutely. Tim, I really appreciate you jumping on and giving your thoughts. This is great stuff and a great append to yesterday's cast. So all the best to you, my man. Looking forward to talking to you again soon. It's going to be fascinating as these things kind of unfold over the next couple weeks.
Right. Well, before we came on, I looked to see if there were any quotes from DeRozan or DeRozan's camp or Kawhi's camp about this, and I didn't see anything yet. So it appears neither one of them is happy. Which is interesting. I mean, if I was DeRozan, I think you kind of rode that wave in San Antonio about as far as you could.
In Toronto.
In Toronto as far as you could. And, you know, the opportunity to play for Popovich and, you know, a situation like San Antonio, although the West is a tough road, as we've talked about. So Toronto probably has a much better chance to get to the finals, you know, this coming season than San Antonio does. But again, there's a lot of worse places DeRozan could have ended up as well. So it'll be interesting. And, you know, it's just interesting to me too, in general, that here we are in the middle of July and the NBA and these transactions are on the top of everyone's mind. And as I was driving through the desert to Las Vegas for the summer league, I was spinning the dial and listening to different sports talk, both national and local. And it was pretty much all NBA, right? And
yeah, it's a testament.
You don't have to go
great.
Back too far in our country's sports history, where in July you're maybe talking about Major League pennant races and the All-Star Game, and, you know, getting ready for football, you know, training camps and things like that. The NBA would not be on people's minds, and now it's NBA's front and center all year round, basically.
It's fantastic. It's awesome, and it's a testament to how great the game has become and how popular it's become. And I hope for continued growth for our sake, because we, being both huge basketball fans, it's fantastic. And I love the league. I love the direction of the league. And you know, stories like this, just this whole summer has been a fascinating story with LeBron and the draft, and now this. It's just fascinating story after fascinating story, and can't say enough about it, man. It's great. It's high drama, brother.
It is.
All right, my man. Hey, Tim, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes of your busy day. And looking forward to touching base soon, brother.
Okay, Fred.
Have a good one, my man.
Thank you.